Hello, everyone. You're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I am, of course, Angela Butler. Today's guest is Mr. Alan Ellison. He's running for the Senate, United States Senate, in South Florida. He will be on the show talking about what he stands for and what he believes in and what he would do as a senator of the United States of America. He's a smart young man. I call him young. Very intelligent. He has a lot to talk about. And he's also doing a fundraiser. He's trying to raise $10,000. So as soon as he calls in, we will continue the show. And again, you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. And the interview is with Alan Ellison. Oh. Hi, Alan. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
Good, and welcome. And welcome to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I am your host, Angela Butler, of course. I've already said this morning I will be interviewing Alan L. Ellison. Alan has announced his candidacy and is running for the United States Congress. This interview is sure to ignite a new era of leaders in Congress. Good morning, Alan, and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. Now, you are a very dynamic individual. Can you give us a little background on yourself and where you come from?
Sure. I was born in a place called Highlands County, which is in Central Florida. I was raised in the neighboring county, which is Hardy County. I went to college in Polk County, which is a county north of that. So I'm the native son of the 17th District of Florida and the district that I'm running in. I grew up the son of a minister, also the son of a special needs instructor. And so I grew up understanding what it means to give back, what it means to serve my fellow brothers and sisters. The thing about me is that I have a gift. I learned this while going to church, and my gift is helping people. So everything that I've done has been to help, you know, my fellow brothers and sisters some kind of way or another. You know, pretty much who I am. I have a very dynamic background. I've done pretty much everything there is to do. I used to be a barber. I used to be a cosmetology instructor at a college. I used to have a corporate development firm. I set up many, many businesses inside of Florida, managed a lot of those businesses. I used to be a sports agent, represented many professional athletes from around the world. At one time, my company operated on three different continents, so I had one of the largest sports agencies in the world. At one time, I had a security officer company. We had many officers, both police, sheriff, private security officers, military personnel that worked for the company, and that company grew to one of the largest in Central Florida. And so, you know, I have a very dynamic, very diverse background. I'm an entrepreneur at heart, but I've done all of these things really to just, you know, position my future. And so right now, you know, I've put a lot of those things on the side to be able to run for Congress.
All right. So why did you decide to run for the United States Congress?
Well, I'm running for this particular office because above all else, my gift, which is tied to my purpose in life, is to help people. And I can't think of a better job to hold than that of a public servant. In public office, you know, I will have the chance to help hundreds of thousands or millions of people with the same level of effort as I do when I'm helping one person at a time. When I'm helping people, I'm at my best. The second reason is that, you know, I'm a product of my environment. You know, I live here in Florida. My family and friends live here, and we're all tired of politics as usual. Our leadership is not working for our district. It's not working for our state. It's not working for the country. The district is stagnant, the country's stagnant, and we're just all eager for positive change. Under current congressional leadership, we've fallen behind. Instead of investing in our children, our land, our economy, the disabled, the elderly community, these are just some of the things that, you know, I'm concerned about. And leaders are not looking out for the people. They're looking out for themselves. And so, you know, I'm running because I believe that it's time to take control of our future, the future of our children and grandchildren. I'm running because I believe that without a doubt, this district, the state, and this nation is poised for progress. But we need leaders with fresh ideas and vision for winning the future for everybody. We can't win the future with more of the same of what we've had for the past 10 years. That's just insanity. It's time to put the power back in the hands of the people. It's our turn. So that's why, you know, I've decided to run.
Okay. Those are great reasons also. Very great reasons. So which district for the United States Congress can people vote for you in?
17th district. It covers 9 counties in Central Florida. Those counties include parts of Polk County, Hardy County, Highlands County, Okeechobee County, Sarasota County, Manatee County, Charlotte, DeSoto, Glade, and Lee County. It used to include Hillsborough, but Hillsborough came out with the redistricting of Florida.
Okay. All right. I read that you have a strong stance on the veterans' care issue. What are some of the challenges that veterans are facing, and what plans would you like to implement to bring about change?
You know, in general, veterans are faced with overwhelming administrative, mental, and physical issues. In particular, our veterans are having to wait on an average of 200 days just to get an initial claim through the system. This is disturbing to me because these are the same men and women who we've sent to fight for our freedoms and resources and those that protect us against potential threats of harm here at home. The very least that we can do is look out for them when they return. So one of the things that I would be definitely fighting for is to increase federal budgets to be able to pay for more staff at the VA system. Right now, there's not enough funding in place to make sure that enough staff is being able to care for these veterans when they come in. And so, you know, there are some of the funding hurdles, the administrative hurdles. We just have to be able to make sure that we're looking out for these individuals while they were looking out for us.
Okay. That was a great reason. I'm glad to hear that you said that you care about veterans' care issues, also about the disabled. It's good to know that there's someone that still cares about the people and doesn't just care about themselves that's running for a political office.
Exactly. Like, like I said, this is a labor of love for me. This is my gift. This is what I do day in and day out, even before running for office. So I just hope to be able to get into office so that I can maximize my stance and gift and be able to really help a lot of people.
Yes, that would be wonderful. If I could vote for you, I would. But I'm glad to have you as a guest for a second time. The things you stand for, there are probably millions of people in the United States of America who believe what you believe.
Yeah, I like to think so. You know, this is the year of the outsider. I've never held a political office before, and I think most people in this country are waking up and getting involved and getting in tune to what's going on in our political process. And so I believe that is going to be what it's going to take to really bring about the necessary changes and get the type of people that really care about people elected to these offices across the country.
Yes, you're on that. I agree with just about everything that you've said during this interview. Like many groups in this country, women have been fighting for equality since suffrage. What important issues will you address concerning women?
You know, that's a good question. You know, I think a lot of times women and other minority groups are overlooked in this country. But I believe in fighting for wage equality, which is something that is definitely not equal in this country. For example, on average, you know, an American woman receives 78 cents on the dollar compared to their male colleagues for the same work. You know, I believe that if a woman is doing the same job as a man, she should get paid the same wage. And so that's something that I'm fighting for, something that I will continue to fight for when I'm in Congress. You know, the other thing is protecting a woman's right to choose. I believe that a woman's right to choose is the most comprehensive issue that we face today, because it's the most dynamic. And in terms of all the different components and factors, really, that that exist within that particular issue, we're talking about, you know, issues that deal with rape, issues that deal with incest, sexually transmitted diseases, marital status, even saving the life of a woman, and so on and so on. And so we have to take a comprehensive look at this issue because it's so dynamic. It's more dynamic than any other issue. And so I'm definitely going to be fighting for a woman's right to choose, because we shouldn't have, you know, policymakers, you know, in the hospital rooms with a woman and her doctor, or a woman and her husband, or a woman and her God and her, you know, her morality. So I think it should be a woman's right to choose. And those are just, you know, a couple of the issues that I'm going to be pushing very hard for, as well as, you know, women-owned businesses, allowing women to get access to the funding that they need to start their businesses, expand their businesses, and so on. And so, you know, that's my stance.
All right. That's great. So you are an entrepreneur. Okay, that is great. Great things that you're wanting to do for this country. What is your stance on the minimum wage?
You know, with respect to the minimum wage, I believe that we definitely need to have a living wage in this country. You know, I agree with what Washington, D.C. just recently did, was to increase, you know, their minimum wage. At the same time, I think that in order for it to really work well, we need to do everything in our power to strengthen businesses so that they can be in a position to pay a living wage, because it's two sides of the equation. I understand both sides very well. I understand that workers need to be able to make ends meet and pay their bills and put food on the table. I'm all for that. At the same time, a wage is also it's an expense to a business. So businesses have to be in a position to be able to meet that expense. And so it's also a comprehensive issue, one that I definitely have a plan for.
Okay. All right. It is very clear that you are visionary, that you are a visionary. That being said, with respect to jobs and the economy, what are some of your ideas and our plans on jobs creation for the citizens of this country, as well as your strategy to revive the economy?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that question, because it actually ties back into what I was saying earlier about my plan to help both workers and business owners. The first thing that I would like to do on day one is present a bill in Congress that streamlines the paperwork at the SBA level, which is a Small Business Administration. Right now, small businesses are the backbone of our economy. They are the driving force more than any other force. They are the driving force of our economy. And so when small business owners or potential entrepreneurs have an idea and they need access to capital, most times they can't go to a bank and get the capital, because most banks are going to require certain things that most business people in the United States, most people in general, just don't have. A lot of it being credit, a lot of it being collateral. So the only other alternative they have is to go to either a family member or friend, or to the SBA. And right now, the SBA, Small Business Administration, is getting about $2 billion a year for the purpose of relending to small business owners. Now, the problem is that although that's a lot of money that's going into the SBA for relending, most people are not able to get past the paperwork to be able to get access to the money. And one of the problems is that there's too much paperwork. The second problem is that there's too many intrusive questions that get too deep into a person's personal business that really have nothing to do with the business itself. And so what it serves as is a deterrent factor. A lot of the business people that want to get access to the money to start businesses, to grow businesses, to be able to pay wages, expand their employee base, a lot of them are just looking in the opposite direction of the SBA. And so one of the things that I would like to do is to streamline that entire process, do away with the red tape, make it easier for people to get access to those funds. And in doing so, not only can businesses start up or expand, but they can pay a living wage because they would have access to the capital that they need so that they don't be burdened by just simply paying that that wage without access to any capital resources.
And I agree with you. There is a lot of red tape when you're trying to start a small business. And you're right. Some people do not make it past the paperwork.
Yep, we definitely want to make that easier for people. I also want to be able to work with colleges across the country that have business degree programs and see if we can help those programs to become more application-based so that when a student graduates from college, they not only graduate with a degree in business, but they graduate with a business so that those businesses have the opportunity, you know, the chance to be able to go out and create more jobs. Remember, it's small businesses in this country that are the driving force behind our economy. So we need to be doing everything in our power to make sure that small businesses have every opportunity to do what they need to be doing so that our economy can be strong, vibrant, and great. Because when the economy is doing good, everyone's doing good.
Yes, that's true. That is so true. I believe the minimum wage is too low. I know about the small businesses. If you raise the minimum wage, from what I'm understanding what you're saying, no, you didn't say that. But my point of view is that if you raise the minimum wage, small businesses may not have the funding, may have to let go of employees or push employees back to part-time. And I understand that. So I agree with what you said about them, about small businesses being able to get the funding that they need to employ people and to pay good wages. They need to be able to get the money to do that. So I agree with what you just said.
Yeah, it's a comprehensive issue, and we just have to be able to look at it in a dynamic way. You know, a lot of times people looking at one side of the equation, but if you want any piece of policy to work, you have to be able to see all sides and come up with a solution that benefits all sides. It's like a win-win.
Yes, that is true. That is very true. That is very, very true. Very true. So I saw on Facebook that you talk a lot about the disabilities issue. What are some of the challenges facing Americans with disabilities? And how do you see yourself affecting those issues?
You know, I think that for one, the disabilities issue, Americans with disabilities, is one that I see it as a sleeping giant in the room. It's the largest issue that affects so many people, but it's also the largest issue that most of the leaders in Congress, most of the media is just not covering. Right now, the number of people that are affected with a disability is 56.7 million people. And that number is based on the last census report. So that is almost 10 years old, which means the population size has grown. And being the case, one could conclude that if the population size has grown and a person could incur a disability through an accident or something like that, it's possible that there are 100 million people in this country that have a disability. Now, the other aspect of it is that for every person with a disability, there is at least one or two other people that is connected to that person, who it might be a parent, a caretaker, and they become affected by that disability. So directly and indirectly, we are looking at maybe 150, possibly 200 million people in this country that are directly or indirectly affected by a disability. And so the issue is just too large for it to just be going unnoticed. I happen to know of a gentleman right now who is 19 years old. He has the Christopher Reeve disability, which means he's paralyzed from his neck down. His monthly bill is $30,000 a month. The state is picking up the bill right now. But what happens is, when he turns 21, like most Americans, they age out of the disability benefit system. So when he turns 21 and he ages out, that financial burden is going to fall on his parents. And right now, they can't make that obligation. So the nurses that take care of him around the clock, making sure that he doesn't get the bed sores, making sure that he's eating, making sure that he's getting all the proper care, if they're not getting paid, they're not going to be around. So not only will the financial burden fall on the family, the caretaking aspect of that burden is going to fall on the family. And we live in the greatest country in the world. There is no reason why we can't come up with a solution that can actually help people like him. Right now there are people, truck drivers, if they happen to have a seizure while they're driving a truck, it is law that they can't drive that truck for 6 months. But also, there is no provision that allow that individual to have revenue to be able to take care of their monthly obligations. So if a person is a truck driver and they have a seizure, that one seizure just took them into a situation where they possibly can't get a check to pay their bills every month, and they could possibly lose their home or whatever else. So I think, you know, we have to be able to come up with solutions. I think in terms of addressing the lack of awareness on the issue is we have to be able to build coalitions. So one of the things that I'm doing is I'm going around the campaign trail and every chance that I get, and I'm talking about the issues. I'm bringing the awareness. I'm building a coalition of people that we can leverage with members of Congress and state legislatures to understand that this is a serious issue and it needs major attention. Whenever I look at homeless people now, I don't see homeless people in the same light that I did, you know, a few years ago. A few years ago, I saw a homeless person, I would think, well, they made bad choices in their life and they're homeless. But from my research, a great deal of your homeless people are people that have a disability that felt, you know, aged out of the system with no family support, and now they become homeless. And if there are certain people that are homeless and they have certain mental disabilities, there have been so many cases where these individuals didn't have the skills or resources to make their life better, and they ended up starving to death on the street. We should not be dealing with that in America. It's like Martin Luther King said, that when you have your brothers and sisters living in an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of an affluent society, I have a problem with that. As great as this nation is, we should not be having those types of issues. And I want to do all that I can to raise the awareness. I want to do all that I can to change policy and make life better for Americans in this country. And that's how we're going to win the future.
Okay. You said something that caught my attention, really caught my attention. Why is the issue of 56.7 million people or more in this country the sleeping elephant in the room with politicians?
Well, I think one reason is because people who have disabilities, and it's just the way society is made up. Most people with disability will just, by virtue, get overlooked as if they don't matter. That's just how people are, okay? But when it comes to leadership in Congress, federal budgets are in place. Entitlements, you have entitlements. That's the largest budget item in our federal budget, okay? Entitlements is funds that pay for social assistance in this country. Now, most of your conservative leaders, your Republicans, they don't really favor having social assistance. They see it as a waste of taxpayers' dollars. Most liberals favor having social assistance. So what happens is our Congress is dominated by Republicans who feel that social assistance to be able to help people with disabilities is a waste of taxpayers' dollars. And so I have a difference of opinion. I believe that the whole purpose of having a tax system to start with was to fund a military war effort way back whenever we were fighting the American Revolution. But whenever we came out of that war victoriously, taxpayer dollars were still going into a fund to fund a war that was over. So part of the congressional delegation said that maybe we ought to take some of this money and put it into social programs since the war is over, because tax dollars were still being generated. And then some of the people in Congress said that we ought to just take the money and keep putting it into building our defense. Now, the whole concept of serve and protect is used today, and it's synonymous with law enforcement, but that term was actually coined and used to define the role of government. One of the ways we serve the public is through social programs. The other way we serve the public is by having representatives that represent and serve the public, represent the people and serve the public. The way we protect the way we protect our citizens is through our defense. So we have to have both. We have to have defense spending, but we have to have social program spending as well. That's what serve and protect is all about. So whenever leaders don't understand that concept, then they really are not working for the people. Now, here's the thing. This is the reason I say that. Right now, defense spending is the second largest item in our federal budget. But at the same time, most of that money doesn't go to our military. It goes to private defense contractors, which are for-profit entities. Now, these entities probably make up less than 1,000 individuals. And just a few days ago, they increased our national security spending budget to $602 billion. So that means that we are spending more money on defense than every country in the world with a military combined. If we were to cut our defense budget in half, we would still be spending more money on our defense than every country in the world combined that have a military. The reason I have a problem with that is, although I love a strong military, and it's one of the things that make America so dominant and so great, the fact of the matter is most of that money is simply not going to our military. It's going to individuals, maybe less than 1,000 individuals who are just getting rich, when that same money could be going to help strengthen the military as well as help people who are in dire situations, people like people who suffer with disabilities, like the gentleman who has the Christopher Reeve disability.
And Christopher Reeve used to play Superman. Yeah, he's
exactly.
Superman.
That's Christopher Reeve. Exactly. He's a Superman. And so, we need more supermen and superwomen in Congress that's looking out for the people, standing up for the people. You know, I'm looking to be that champion because I believe that, you know, the people deserve something new. The people deserve a true champion, someone who's looking to serve them and not serve themselves. And so that's why I'm running for Congress. And if we can build a coalition of people of like minds, people that are social change agents, people that are activists, people who really care about one another, this is how we're going to win. We need people to get involved. We need people to get behind these types of candidates and vote the ones out of office who are not looking out for their best interests.
Yes. So how can people around the country help you in campaign for U.S. Congress? And how would people send money to your campaign?
It's very simple. You can easily get involved with the campaign in a variety of different ways by visiting ellisonforcongress.com. There you can sign up for ways to help the campaign. We're always looking for people to make phone calls, to spread the word. We're always looking for people to use their social media pages. We're looking for digital defense teams. We're looking for people to make contributions, have house parties. Right now I'm faced with a 7-day deadline to get on Florida's ballot. Florida's ballot fee is $10,000. And so I'm looking for people to go to Ellison for Congress today and make a contribution, because we can't do this without you. If you believe in what we've talked about here today and you agree with what I'm saying, then please, by all means, get involved. You can find me on Facebook at Alan L. Ellison. I'm on all the social networks under the same Alan L. Ellison. My public figure page on Facebook is Alan L. Period Ellison. By all means, get involved with the campaign, because this campaign is not just a campaign to get me elected. It's a campaign that's really helping people. My campaign actually works with other campaigns, and what we do is whenever someone has an issue, we try to take care of that issue right now. When I get off of this call here, I'm going to make another phone call to someone's landlord to try to buy them some time so that they can not get evicted today. And so this is the type of thing that I do. This is what our team does. This is what other candidates that our campaign work with in their races are looking to do. We're trying to change the landscape of how representation is ran in this country. And for all of those ones that are not looking to represent, we want to run them out of office.
Okay, I have one question. This is backtrack. I know you've got to go. This 1-minute question. You said the military, in your opinion, is not getting the money. So who, you said it's less than 1,000 people or less who are getting rich. What do you mean, like buying shoes or shoestrings for companies? Is that what you're talking about? A helmet?
No, for
gun?
For example, whenever money is spent in defense, it's spent all over the place. It's spent in military. It's spent on weapons. It's spent on various things that the government might purchase, you know, for the defense industry. But for example, whenever we go to war, whenever we have a conflict, the government might need certain things. They'll go to a for-profit company to buy those things. And those companies, a lot of times, are overcharging government for products and services. They overcharge, like, for example, the average military person is getting about $45,000. A private security officer who worked for a defense contractor who's doing less work a lot of the times might make $160,000 in 6 months. Now, if that particular defense contractor is making that kind of money, imagine what the company that's employing him is making. So when it get right down to the nitty-gritty, the individuals who own these companies are really getting the largest share of the defense budget. And you're talking about companies like Lockheed Martin, like Raytheon, like Bose, Boeing, Halliburton, the companies like that. So they're getting the largest share of the defense budget. And that, when you add them all up, you're talking about less than 1,000 individuals. And so when you have men and women of uniform, a lot of times where their parents are having to buy certain things for them to be safe in the field, or when you have veterans coming home from war and they're not able to get the kind of care they need, and a lot of times they're dying before they get the care, or they're committing suicide, or they're getting hooked on pain medication or whatever, we need to be using those funds that we're raising in this country to be helping those individuals, people that deserve it the most, not the people that are at the top of the defense budget food chain, you know. So that's what I was saying.
Okay. All right. So everyone, those of you who would like to contribute to the campaign of Alan Ellison for Congress, tell them again how they would be able to contribute.
They can go to ellisonforcongress.com, and once you get to that site, you can make a contribution on the site. We are trying to meet our deadline of 7 days from now to get on the ballot for U.S. Congress, and that ballot fee is $10,400. The most an individual can make a contribution towards is $2,700. So please, if you can, anything you can do, it will put us one step closer to meeting that goal. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Alan Ellison. Thank you for being on Show Talk with Angela Butler.
Thank you for having me.
All right. This is going to conclude the show with Alan Ellison, who is running for Congress. Those of you who would like to contribute, he said how you can contribute and where to go. Like you say, he's trying to raise to get on the ballot $10,400. This is a man who knows what he's doing. So those of you who would like to vote, who would like to donate money to his campaign, please do. You've been listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Everyone have a happy Father's Sunday and happy early Father's Day to everyone who's a father.